everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Speaking the Lawn, the seventh episode of Speaking the Lawn since our split. But today we're talking football. Paul and Pierce were on for a great episode about a week ago. Talk conference realignment, just primer for the season. And now we're going to get into some more heavier preview content. This week we're doing a roster preview. Going to go position by position, give our confidence grade scale, see how we're feeling about each position group, where the depth lines up everywhere. And then next week we'll do our typical game by game season prediction. But yeah, today I have Dan and I have Paul with me. Dan, how you doing today? It's been a little bit since you've been on the podcast. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah. Thank you for having me on. I want to say I'm excited for the UVA football season. You know, I'll play the cautiously optimistic role. You know, optimistic is always something that is relative. And, you know, I think a very successful UVA season would be probably 6-6 going bowling and playing in some sort of military bowl type game. But, you know, we have played zero games so far. So that's all that could be said.
Yeah, I think that's probably where a lot of people's that's probably our best case scenario, all things considered. Win against Tech's always fun, but we'll get into the schedule more next week. This week we want to talk about Virginia specifically. But before we do that, Paul, how are you doing?
I'm great, man. It's getting to be football season. I got all my my emotions out of the way last week with Pierce, and now we can just, you know, dive into the X's and O's and the Jimmies and the Joes.
Absolutely. All right. So we're just going to kick it off right off. We're going to start on offense, start with the quarterbacks. Yesterday, Tony Elliott, in his last press conference or last practice of fall camp, announced that Tony Musket, the Monmouth transfer, who is presumably going to be the starter, will officially be UVA starter in week one against Tennessee on September 2nd, I believe it is. And so we'll talk a little bit about the quarterback room. Obviously, Anthony Calandria was pushing or supposedly pushing Musket in training camp. The big name not included here is obviously Jay Woolfolk, who's decided to focus on baseball. But in Musket, Calandria, you've got some talent. You've got a little bit of experience in Musket, guy who can be a leader for this team potentially. Paul, I'll start with you here. Your thoughts on this quarterback room, Tony Musket. What should our expectations be? And on a scale of 1 to 10, I guess I should have explained this at the top of the show, 1 being this position is a weakness for this roster, bottom tier ACC, not going to be able to hang, 2-10, ACC, all ACC caliber, you know, solidly a strength, something that this team could, you know, just rely on game in, game out. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel about this quarterback room and why?
Yeah, it's hard to put any sort of high number on that scale on a position that's so important but has so many question marks. That obviously Tony Musket's career at the FCS level was very impressive, but there's no. We've, you know, there have been players who have made that step up fairly seamlessly, but, you know, it's also a big step up in competition and getting dropped in against a team that's top 5, top 10 in the country, depending on who you're talking to, game one. We may not know an answer to that question for a couple of weeks of what UVA is getting. You know, credit to a true freshman coming in and at least, you know, you never know how much is just camp talk, but making it look like there was a quarterback battle and making Musket earn it as opposed to just defaulting because no one else was good enough. So the reports on Musket are positive. The gets the ball out quick, gets the ball out accurately, it knows when to check it down. Brennan Armstrong has a lot of strengths in his game, but those were not strengths that we saw in this system last year. So I will say a optimistic 4 and upside 7. That's one of those, like, I could, if it's just because there's so much unknown about it, gotta keep it in that sort of under 5 category. But, you know, if the sort of best hopes are realized, I think Musket's a top third of the ACC potential in terms of quarterback production.
Yeah, I think he has the arm talent. Like, I think just on a raw sort of like, can this guy make the throws? I think we're probably there. Again, FCS level, you have to extrapolate. But yeah, a lot of unknowns, and how he sort of fits into this offense. Like, how good will the offense around him be to allow him to be good enough? How much protection will he get? Those are obviously questions that we will try to answer today. Dan, I'll throw it to you before I give my own grade, but what are your thoughts on this QB room? Where do they stack up in your head?
Yeah, I'm going to go with a middle ground five here. I have seen a lot of ACC quarterback rankings, and I've seen Musket kind of by default be placed at 13 or 14 in the conference. I'm not sure that he will finish the year quite that low. I think he's more of a high floor kind of quarterback. I like how Des Kitchings went out and handpicked his guy that he wanted. Not that Tony Musket's going to light up the world or anything, but it's a guy that fits the system a lot better, whereas Brennan Armstrong was kind of left over from the previous regime. And I don't know. I think that he'll probably finish with okay numbers, but here's the thing. The moving up from the FCS level, which Tony Musket came from Monmouth to UVA to the Power 5 level, that's not unprecedented. A guy I like to compare this situation to a lot is Cameron Ward, who came from Incarnate Word last year or 2 years ago to Washington State last year. He was lighting up the world at Incarnate Word more so than Musket was at Monmouth. Then he was kind of okay, good, not great at Washington State. But I'm just saying it's not unprecedented to make that jump. And Paul, you talked about that too. So just want to reiterate that.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's new blood, and it's sort of an interesting balance between with Armstrong, you had someone who was established, someone who had been incredibly successful at the ACC level, but at the same time, the switching of regimes, the switching of systems made it tough. And sort of it's a question of, is Musket more bought in than Brennan was? And not that I think, you know, Brennan Armstrong is someone who just as a person, as a competitor, like you could never question. But at the same time, it's just you go from that season in 2021, that fall, and the success that they had to last year and the lack thereof. And it obviously had to weigh on him. This year, I think there's fewer expectations on Musket. I think that he will benefit from that. And I also think that just sort of coming in, and he said that he's, I mean, again, is it just camp talk? But he said that he's comfortable in this system. And I think that he does have the traits. I'll follow suit with Dan. Maybe I'm being too optimistic, but I will also give a five for the quarterback's room. I think, you know, Calandria, like maybe this is the guy. I mean, Musket will probably play at least 2 years at Virginia unless things go horribly poorly this year. But it seems like Calandria is always, or sort of, he's showing sparks early, and that's never a bad sign for a young quarterback. So I'll notch it up maybe a half point or a point for Calandria sort of doing things, which is always a good thing at the quarterback position. Moving on, we'll stay in the backfield, but look at the running backs. It's a deep room. There, I think I wrote down in my prep here, like maybe 8-9 names. But it's a pretty big question mark of, is there, and it's fine to do a running back by committee, but is there that quality that's actually going to make a positive impact on games beyond just running behind what is probably going to be a mediocre offensive line, potentially at best? So just to run through some names, obviously Mike Hollins, someone who will have the entire support of the Virginia community, who if he's assuming that he steps on the field this season, which he will, that's already a success. Like it's going to be, you know, we're grading on a scale here, we're grading on a curve for Mike Hollins. And, but at the same time, like, can he, now that he's back on the field, can he be this guy who in the past we always saw as having a high ceiling, of having high potential to do a lot of different things in the backfield? And, you know, he could have that type of season. Obviously, there's other guys beyond Mike Hollins. There's Kobe Pace, Paris Jones, Cody Brown, Xavier Brown, Jack Greasy, Ahmad Faustin, a number of other young guys. Dan, I'll kick it to you first here. What are you thinking of the running back room?
I think this could potentially be one of the strengths of the team. I'm going to give it a 6.5. You know what? I'm going to go as high as a 7. Shout out Bennett Conlin, though. He made a comment that basically every single person, every single insider in training camp likes to say that they have a deep running back room. So us saying that makes us no different than all other 130 programs in FBS football. If you think about it, at the same time, I definitely think that does apply to UVA. I really think Kobe Pace could have a breakout season. I saw the way he was utilized at Clemson 2 years ago and with Tony Elliott, actually. And I like how creative that he got with him. You know, Kobe Pace is not the biggest back in the world, not the bruiser, the guy that's going to run you over, yet he was in packages on the goal line because of his ability to, you know, slip through tiny little holes in the offensive line and just be patient yet attack the spot when you need to. And so I think that you got Kobe Pace, you got Mike Hollins, who I still believe is the most well-rounded back in the room. And then you just got young guys who, if given the opportunity, could totally break out. And they have a lot of breakaway speed in that room. And I'm pretty confident in this running back room. I would say if we're going to give a strength to this team, and definitely a strength to this offense, it would be the running backs.
Yeah, I can see definitely the room for optimism there. Just a couple other names to know. One of the freshmen, Noah Vaughn, is a small scat back type. He's only 5'8", but a real spark plug in his offense in high school, coming out of Tennessee. That's somebody that could be used as a change of pace, really situational player. And I think that's kind of the story of what this running back room is it's all dependent on usage. It's, you know, you've got a little bit of riding the hot hand for your, you know, there's nobody in this room that's the bell cow or doesn't look like it right now. But some combination of riding the hot hand and knowing who's going to be best in what roles without telegraphing what's coming. That's the difficult balance to strike when you've got a running back room that's well-rounded in a lot of different ways, but guys might be playing pretty specific. Is, you know, if it's every time you bring in, you know, Cody Brown, it's going right up the middle because he's the sledgehammer. You know, you got to make sure to have the variation in the offense, and hopefully another year of everybody being in the offense and being more comfortable with it will give Des Catchings a little bit more ability to mix things up. I think the Jack Greasy hype coming out of camp is really interesting. This is a guy that's a walk-on with a famous name, that he is the, I think, nephew of Brian Greasy, which would make him the grandson, I don't know, something of Bob Greasy.
Yeah, I think two generations down from Bob, yeah.
Yeah. You know, busted off a couple of big runs in the spring game and the scrimmages, has been impressive in the saber drill that they've been doing to end practices. So that's, you know, running back is one of those positions that you can have one of those guys pop sometimes, a sort of an unheralded back. So I'm not quite as confident. I'm going to do sort of like a where I am versus where it could be score again. I'm going to do that for every group. I've just decided. So I think sort of confidence level sitting here today. Yeah, I can match it. I can go to a 6, I think, in terms of where it could be. Best case scenario is like an 8, 8.5, but that's just, you know, it's hard to be an elite running back group in college football. There's a lot of good running backs every year. So, you know, an 8 would be nothing to sneeze at when graded against the rest of the Power 5. But Zach, what's your thought?
I think with the emphasis that Elliott and Kitchings put on running the ball, I do think, and again, it's not all dependent on them, obviously. There's a lot in front of them that has to go right. But I do think that this room has a lot of pressure on it and needs to be playing to the Cal. If Virginia is going to be a bowl team, which Dan and I were saying is like probably the ceiling, is like getting to that 6-6 mark. That's like very probably best case scenario, not to trash on this team, but like there are just holes throughout this roster, and who said, you know, maybe they can do better than that, but that should be the goal, as it is typically every year. For them to reach that point, I think that these running backs are going to have to be really good. I think I'll echo a 6 for now, just because I think that there's just so much unproven talent. Like, you've seen flashes from a lot of these guys in a lot of different scenarios, but, you know, I'm not sure if flashes from a couple of them at different times throughout the season is going to be enough, frankly. And I know it's not going to be enough, just because even if you are doing running back by committee, as you said, Paul, it has to be to some extent planned. It has to be thought out. It can't always just be we're hoping that one of these five guys gets hot today, because at that point you're just setting yourself up to, I don't know, just be an inconsistent offense. But I'll go with six. I think as we've talked through, they're a talented group. And who says that they can't do great things this season? We'll transition to another sort of fun, talented, fairly young group, the wide receivers. Stick with the sort of the talent here. You know, a lot of guys that are, again.
I know what you're setting up. You're not going to say we're not getting to, you're not using the word skill. You're not replacing skill position with talent. I will find you and I will hurt you.
I'll be honest.
That is the word, that's the number one rule on this.
The word slipped my mind here. The word slipped because Pierce typically hosts these and I don't like hosting.
Pierce just likes to get my goat.
Yeah. Regardless, we'll stick with the skill position.
Speed positions.
Sorry. There's skill elsewhere. But looking at this wide receiver room, there's definitely some talent, you know, and there's guys who are maybe unproven, but have the potential to be breakout players for Virginia. Obviously, there's also the truly tragic and unfortunate reality that two players who likely would have been on this team and in this room are no longer with us after November's shooting. And so that's a tough sort of, it's hard to grapple with that. But if we do look forward at this room, there are guys like Malachi Fields, like the transfer Malik Washington, Damique Starling, who have some ability, and there's even younger guys than that who could flash. Dan, I'll throw it to your way first here again. What are you thinking about this group of wide receivers? Who do you think is going to break out? Who do you think is going to stand out the most?
Yeah, I'm going to also go, I'll go 5.5 here, so slightly above the middle ground. I think the problem with this room is that they don't necessarily have that one or two superstar guys. I think Malik Washington could be that guy, but transfer from Northwestern, what do you have around like 700 receiving yards last year? So I think he's that the biggest chance for UVA to have 1,000 yard receiver. And he definitely provides that quickness, that ability after the catch, that big play flash that we need out of a UVA receiver. And in terms of breakout candidates, it's got to be Malachi Fields. We've been talking about it for a couple years at this point. He definitely showed so much flash in that 2021 offense when he was playing, but he was just buried behind so many other productive wide receivers. But I think you mentioned the two guys I'm looking at. It's definitely going to be Washington. It's definitely going to be Fields. And if I'm just going to throw one more name out there, J.R. Wilson, he flashed during the spring game, so I like him as well.
Yeah, I think those are all good names to keep an eye on. And I think the thing to be the most positive about with this wide receiving core is that it has the various pieces that if you were designing the wide receivers for this offense, you want a couple of the 6'4", 6'5", big body guys. You've got that in Malachi Fields and Dak Twitty, if he's able to come back from his injury, and J.R. Wilson, as we've seen a little bit last season and a little bit in spring game. You want the small, shifty speed and space Malik Washington. Behind him, you've got Sudarian Harrison, who's maybe the most intriguing of the offensive freshmen, and Jaden Gibson, a guy who owns basically every receiving record in Georgia high school history. So a very productive high school player that, you know, again, could find a role, hopefully, you know, for somebody that would, that role would most likely be backing up Malik Washington. Hopefully we won't see that much of Sudarian Harrison or Jaden Gibson. But then you've also got the sort of the in between speed burners. And that's where a Damique Starling, that's, you know, 6'1", 6'2", a guy like Tyleric Coleman, again, another freshman that has gotten a lot of shout outs, a lot of praise from the coaching staff during fall camp. Again, a really speedy athlete type. You know, that's kind of the three molds you want for a three out, you know, three wide receiver set. And there's at least some indication that UVA's got those guys. If you're asking me how I feel right now, there's too many question marks to go too high with it. I would peg it at a five, but I think this could be in a best case scenario. I think the wide receiver core is where this offense really shines. And I would go as high as a nine upside of potentially churning out one or two all conference guys. If the pieces all fall together and Musk gets as good as we think he can be, you know, seeing a Demeke Starling or Malik Washington on the first or second team all ACC would not astonish me.
Yeah, this is the group that I'm most confident in so far, just because I think that you have in the running back room, you just have so many different guys and give you options. But at the same time, like, you typically will have them. I mean, you'll have a maximum of two running backs on the field at once, and Virginia didn't do much of that last season. And I think that the number of guys and the potential depth that they have in this sort of group gives them enough different cooks in the kitchen who can rise up, different guys. You know, if one guy doesn't flash the way that, you know, we would like him to, then another one could. So I'm going to go seven here. I think it'll be a fun group. I think as long as Tony Musket has enough time to throw the ball, that there could be some real highlight plays from this group and from Musket to the guys that you guys just mentioned. I really like Fields. I think he's going to be fun. And I know that's nothing groundbreaking or revolutionary, but I think it'll be a fun watch and a fan favorite once he gets on the field some more. We'll shift to tight ends. Sackett Wood and Grant Mish, the two top receivers from that group last season, are back. Obviously, you've got a guy like Josh Rawlings, sort of still scratching at the surface, some other younger players that haven't quite proven themselves in the passing game, but maybe could be in the running game. Paul, throw it to you first, as not quite the big guys yet, but let's hear your thoughts on the tight ends.
Getting there. This is I don't know how good the guys are in this group. There's a little bit of a different question mark for me of what is this offense trying to do with its tight ends? There's nobody on this roster who's a Jelani Woods physical freak. There's nobody on this roster that, you know, you go the other direction is basically a wide receiver in a bigger body. You get down to some of the freshmen, that Sakai Kirby's a little bit that way. So for me, there's kind of a high floor, low ceiling group for me. I probably would put it at just a static six. That Grant Mish and Sackett Wood, we know what we're getting from them. But I wouldn't expect to get a whole bunch more than what we got from them last year. It's not a knock on them. Like I said, I don't know what the role is in this offense. And so it's a little bit hard for me to pin down what to expect from them. It means I'm not terribly, I don't get a bunch of discomfort from the group, but it's not what the offense runs through. It's not the secret sauce or anything. I'm a solid middle of the road, you know, gentleman C of a six for this group. Dan, how about you?
I'll go four. I think that the lack of a vertical receiving threat in a tight end room definitely matters. And I know a lot of college offenses, and probably UVA included, could totally get away with not having a downfield tight end receiving threat and be totally fine. But it definitely matters. I think the main role that these tight ends will be used in is probably run blocking, and Mish, Sackett Wood, or those are definitely their strengths. But I also don't expect either of them to have more than a couple hundred receiving yards at the end of the year. So you can't really go above five, I feel like, in the tight end room. But also, like you said, the high floor, they're not going to be the reason that this team loses games. They're kind of just, you know, they'll do their job.
So clearly, Dan did not watch UVA play North Carolina last year, because Sackett Wood had six catches for 94 yards, including a 33-yarder that was inches. I believe it was 33-yarder. It was inches away from being a touchdown. So disrespect to Sackett Wood, I'm going to go 5, I think, just to echo everything you guys said. To some extent, you know what you're getting. Maybe you get a little bit more some days in the passing game. Ideally, that's not who they're relying on there anyway. And hopefully they can give some help on the edge to this offensive line and offensive tackle group that will very likely need it. With that being said, Paul, I'm just gonna hand you the reins here to talk about the offensive line, the beauty that this group will be. Not to be like, listen, there are good players in this room. They all work hard. I don't mean to trash on anyone in particular, rather just the reality that this is going to be probably what makes or breaks this, at least the UVA offense this season.
Paul. Yeah, and with that in mind, I do think there is a lot of room for optimism with this group as well. That with the transfers in of Ugana Nana from Houston, Brian Stevens, and Jimmy Crist, those are guys who have either proven themselves at you know, it's hard to even call Houston a smaller program or a smaller school at this point. Yeah, they're a group of five moving up to the Power Five level, but you know, they've been in that mix for a couple of years. So guys who have proven themselves, and then you got a Jimmy Crist coming in from he was a really well-regarded recruit coming in from the big football program of Penn State. You mix in the Mikhail Boley and Ty Furnish, that looks like it will probably be the starting five, with sort of left to right would be Boley, Nana, Furnish, Stevens, and Crist. You know, we haven't gotten to see those players together in fall camp, and that's the biggest thing to be worried about, especially for the first few weeks of the season, is if they haven't gotten to build the chemistry together, or you're throwing a patchwork out there against an SEC defense in Tennessee, you know, that's getting to the point where they are five fingers functioning as a fist as opposed to just five pieces, is going to be the struggle. But I do think the possibility is there that I do have almost as much optimism for this group as I do for the wide receiver room. So I think there's a lower floor, which makes me worried that I think there's like, I would peg it at probably a 3 or a 4 in terms of my comfort level, again, because there's so many guys we haven't seen in a UVA uniform, and because they haven't been able to practice together as a unit, I would peg it, like I said, a 3 or a 4. Upside, I really think 7 or 8. I think breaking into that all ACC, especially the first team all ACC conversation, would be really, really tough for any of these guys. But they don't have to be world beaters for me to be comfortable with them. They need to be able to keep Musket upright more than they don't. And with as much as we've talked about, you know, the guys that can play different roles with the running backs, if they can get a little scheme help from Des Kitchings, I think this is a group that can, you know, be much better than what we saw last year, and much better than the doom and gloom that has seemed to surround this position group this year. I do not, that is a strong position that I hold weekly. I am okay to be talked out of it if one of you feels strongly to the contrary.
I wouldn't say I feel strongly to the contrary. I would say I lean more towards your floor becoming a reality than your ceiling becoming a reality.
Sure.
But I'm going to go with the 3.5. I could be talked into a 4 here. I think definitely adding guys from the transfer portal, like you said, I believe 2 or potentially 3 of the starting 5 will be incoming transfers. That's definitely a good thing, but also continuity on the offensive line matters. So they're going to be certainly better by week 10 than they are week 2, week 3. Getting Jimmy Crist is a big win out of the portal, especially from Penn State, because that was a guy that UVA wanted out of high school, and they had his brother in the program as well on the defensive line. They did not get him. Obviously, like I said, Penn State ended up getting Jimmy Crist, but getting him in the program is definitely big for purposes like that. I believe he's an in-state kid, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And his brother Tommy was part of this program for a while. So it was, you know, that's the transfer recruiting that has been positive of UVA bringing back in kids that were in-state, well-regarded kids that they missed on the first time, but pulling them in from big programs. But sorry, go ahead.
No, that's really all I have on the offensive line. I'll let Zach say what he has to say.
Yeah, I think I'm a solid three. I think that I, again, will echo most of what you all said. I think I see the ceiling. I see the potential. I see what Paul is saying. I think that I am being cautious after I was probably entirely too optimistic last season. I think in our season prediction, I had them going something like 9-3. And I think that this is where I'm most nervous. And so, you know, I think that obviously there's ability, and I think that Terry Heffernan was a good add, especially after losing Garrett Touje when they did, and that's a tough position to fill, and the signs are at least positive that this could become a solid group moving into the future, whether that's these players, whether it's future players. But I think right now I'm going to need to see something before I am truly confident that this will not be the offense's weakness in 2023. With that, we've been going on a little while now, but we'll move to the defense. We'll try to speed it up so that we don't keep people for too long listening to our thoughts. But talk about the D-line. I think we're just going to combine D-tackle, D-end, bandit, nose tackle, however you want to break it up, and sort of do it as one. Obviously, there's lots of guys to talk about here. Dan, I'll let you go first here and sort of give your initial broad thoughts on this D line that probably, contrary to the offensive line, is a point where people might be more confident.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 7. I could be talked into even higher. I think that in terms of run defense, this group has the potential to be really, really good. It was definitely good at most points in the season last year, and I think they could absolutely replicate that with a lot of faces coming back. What's the injury status on Chico Bennett, just to be
not super clear just as of yet? It is a not expected to be season ending, not expected to be half the season even, but it is probably won't see him for the first couple of weeks, if for no other reason than he's missed so much of fall camp and the conditioning that comes with it.
Okay, yeah, because getting Chico Bennett back on the field will be huge, but I think Cam Butler, very probably the highest upside as a pass rusher. I'm a fan of Aaron Faumui. He has had issues in the past with like discipline and stupid penalties and whatnot, but he's a very talented player, and I think the pass rushing for this unit without Bennett could be okay to maybe above average, but I think the run defense is really where the most upside lies with this defensive line.
Yeah, I think this is this is the highest floor certainly of any position group in the program. I have more confidence in this group than I do in the defensive backs. I know we'll get there in a minute. I one thing I feel like we've been saying for, or at least I've been saying for years, is this is going to be a breakout season for Ben Smiley. But the indications from camp are that this really is the Ben Smiley that we expected coming out of high school. That whether it's the scheme shift or he's just finally putting it all together, there seems to be some real positive developments there as he's found his role on the edge of defense. The other player that I would expect to really see big things out of this year is Jameer Carter. One of the most physically impressive players on the roster. He's a kid that just moves incredible weight in the weight room, and we started to see the production on the field last year of having that translate. So those are guys that, you know, we saw how good Faumui is. We saw how good Chico Bennett is. We saw how good Cam Butler is. There are more guys behind him. You know, a guy like a Lawrence Terry or a Jonathan Horton, even a younger guy like Bryce Carter. I mean, there's there is a lot of talent and a lot of depth in the defensive line room, but this is the one group that's had the production already. So I would probably peg them as like, not my worst case scenario, but my sort of realistic expectation is a 7. And the upside for this is 9, is there are potential multiple all conference guys in this position group. If, you know, it's not even taking a step forward from last year for a lot of them. A lot of them, it's just if they can replicate what they did last year, we could be seeing those kind of accolades at the end of the year.
Absolutely. I think I will stick with you guys at a 7 for now. I think if Chico Bennett was fully healthy, I might be an 8, just in sort of like knowing that you had him and knowing that you had him through fall camp. That just provides another element to it. But yeah, I think this is this defense could be fun and probably will be. And I think that what John Rudzinski has done with this group in a very short amount of time has been entirely impressive. And especially since that 2021 season when the defense was paper thin and the run defense was, you know, not great. So I think that this is a group that will be fun to watch and could have that sort of high ceiling potential of getting to the quarterback. Especially if Chico Bennett is healthy. We'll move to the linebackers now before getting to the secondary. Probably another group that has some solid, reliable players at the top with young, unproven, but talented players coming up behind them that could challenge for spots. Dan, what are your thoughts on the linebackers and who do you think might flash that people maybe aren't expecting?
Yeah, I would give the linebackers, I'm thinking between a 5 and a 6. So I'll cheat again and go with a half grade of a 5.5. I think that definitely, like I said, with the defensive front, with the defensive linemen, I think that run defense is going to be the strength. I know that Rudzinski doesn't have a ton of linebackers on the field at once, but the guys that are on the field are asked to cover a lot of space and whatnot. But I think linebackers will be an above average position. Not having Nick Jackson will be pretty critical, but I'm going to go with, as a breakout player, let's go Josh McCarron.
There's a history of guys from Washington coming to UVA and doing pretty good. I gotta be honest, this is the defensive group that I'm the least confident in. As much a credit to the other two groups of defensive line and defensive backs, I was losing Nick Jackson is the biggest thing of as I was sort of sitting down to prep for this, going, who's the linebacker that I really remember seeing a lot of out of last year, going, yeah, that person's really impressive. That's somebody who's really going to be a contributor. And after Nick Jackson, it got to be a little bit of like, So James Jackson is somebody that is probably going to have to play a pretty big role this year. We're talking about how much Rudd counts on linebackers to cover space. That's something that was sort of, I think, needed to come up a little bit in his game. One guy that I think coming into this position group, Lex Long, of moving down from safety, putting on a little bit more weight. I love that as a move for players in college of going from defensive back to linebacker in a system that asks them to do a lot of coverage, be real athletes. So that's a guy that I think could find his way into some really big positions and really big spots for UVA this season. But Zach, how about you? Oh, I need to give him a number. Like 5, upside 7.
Yeah, I'll split the difference there and go 6. I think it's going to be hard for this group to be bad. Like I don't see that low floor. You know what I mean? And playing behind this defensive line is probably going to clean some things up and make decisions easier, especially in the run game. I agree with you, Paul, that Lex Long at linebacker is going to be fun to watch. And I think, you know, could probably, I mean, potentially be, I mean, he could very well lead UVA in tackles this season, depending on how much they do use him. Presuming it's a lot, though. I think James Jackson is a guy that Elliott has always talked about as having the athleticism for the position, but just still needing time to get comfortable. Like, he was in and out of sort of that starting lineup. I think Jackson was banged up once, Nick Jackson was banged up a couple of times, and that thrust James into it a little bit more. But he's a guy that Elliott's always talked about sort of as almost there. And I think probably the question mark for him is he there? And so, you know, we'll see. Obviously, we'll have to see games to know 100%. But I go six, fairly confident. Don't think that this will be a weakness of the team. Maybe it's a slight weakness of the defense, considering the strengths at other positions. We'll move to the secondary. Paul, I'll let you go. I mean, you can talk specifically corners, safeties, however you want to do it. If you want to talk more in general about sort of the back line of the Virginia defense.
Yeah, it's kind of sometimes even hard a little bit to pin down who's going to be doing what in terms of corners versus safeties. And, you know, there's even within the safeties, you've got box safeties versus high safeties and all that kind of stuff. This is another place that you've got a transfer coming in Malcolm Green that's expected to be a top level contributor right away, coming in from Clemson. That's another, like Jimmy Crist, that's another of the in-state highly recruited coming in from a big football program transfers that hopefully can pay dividends down the line. I think that if there's a strength of this group that many are saying is the strength of the defense, I think it's probably the safeties. You've got Antonio Clary, who had a good year last year, Jonas Sanker, who really showed out, had a couple of games. He was just unbeatable. And you've got a guy like Cohen King that was a strong contributor as well. I think there's a little bit less depth there. But the corners, you've got Trey Simpkins, you've got Dre Walker is a freshman that really, really seems to have captivated the coach's attention, which is hard to do for a defensive back as much as they are, you know, you can't make even one mistake at that position. So this is kind of a high floor group for me. I would say probably a six. I think there's a upside of probably an eight or so. Again, hard to be an elite defensive back group in a conference like the ACC. But I think this is, again, if this group can basically replicate what it did last year, the defense will be in a pretty good spot. But Dan, I want to hear your thoughts too.
Yeah, I would say I'm going to give it a seven. I think that this is the position group that has the fewest amount of holes on the defense, actually. I think that it's a pretty safe bet that they're going to produce. I know the big storyline regarding the UVA defensive back room is the loss of Fentrell Cypress, who is off to an in-conference team in Florida State, and he is getting all the hype in the world there. Well-deserved for Fentrell Cypress. But despite losing him, I think that there's definitely just so much upside with this position group. A guy that has not been talked about a lot is Tavon Kyle, who had a kind of an interesting career trajectory, right? Because he started off at Iowa State, and he was, I think, a high school class of 2018, maybe. He's been college for a while, but he started off having a couple of really solid years for Iowa State, then has gone through a lot, and the playing time has kind of diminished over his most recent couple of seasons, but he has definitely experienced. I think he was third team to honorable mention all Big 12 guy in his first couple of years. And he's definitely going to play a much bigger role at UVA. So that's a guy to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm pessimistic, not pessimistic, but maybe slightly more pessimistic just because I feel like, the losses of Anthony Johnson and Fentrell Cypress are significant, and those two were cornerstones of the Virginia defense season. I know, Paul. I know there's
it's a preseason podcast, but Zach's in midseason form, y'all.
I know. Never left. regardless, like I think that like just those two guys being gone definitely, you know, makes me nervous. But at the same time, you know, I have faith in the talent. And frankly, I have faith in Chrome Cox and John Rudzinski, to be able to coach up a group of fairly talented players that can, you know, be stable enough for this Virginia defense to give the offense opportunities to stay in games. So yeah, altogether, I mean, I think that this defense is probably undoubtedly the strength of the roster and could potentially build on last season. You guys have any final thoughts on the defense? I guess we didn't do final thoughts on the offense either, but final thoughts on sort of either group from a larger perspective.
Don't judge them by what happens week one.
Yeah.
That offense is designed to make defenses look stupid, and it did it to a bunch of really good defenses in the SEC last year. And I'm not saying treat the Tennessee game like a scrimmage, but there is the data that will come out of that for us as fans should be a lot of caveats in terms of what to expect the rest of the season, but especially on the defense.
Yeah, I just want to see progression, because if we think about at week one last year, even the Richmond game, there was just so much like procedural struggles, like so many things. We'll talk about the special teams in a second, but like the special teams and like just lining up and a lot of false starts and a lot of like confusion with formations, etc. So I guess year two of a coaching tenure, working past that a little bit. Now it's more about consistency and more about, you know, the defense made a big stride last year. It's really, I think the pressure lies on the offense to be able to play complementary with the defense. And it doesn't have to be great, but definitely out of the basement of the ACC in terms of production is what's absolutely necessary for this team to have a chance to go 6-6 and go bowling.
Undoubtedly. Look at special teams. We'll look at punter and kicker. I'm just going to separate the two because I want to give someone a 10. And if someone does, I believe it's Daniel Sparks. And Paul, I'll let you do kickers. And well, you can give your punter thoughts as well.
You're damn right you will.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Am I starting right now?
Yeah, go.
Okay.
I don't have any.
So the story of the season is Mike Hollett. The story of the season is Mike Collins. No question about it. The second story of the season, and I have immense personal bias that I will own up to, is Matt Gagnard, the mid-30s Marine veteran Darden School kicker that is, as of last report, competing with Will Betridge for the starting job. My personal bias here, Matt is a fraternity brother of mine. He's a year behind me from undergrad, which means he graduated from college in 2011. For those of you who woke up in your mid-30s and were too sore to take the dog for a walk this morning, consider strapping on pads and stepping into a Power 5 football game. Matt had decided he's been training to be a kicker for years. He's worked with Nick Novak, who kicked at Maryland and then in the NFL. He's did the kicking circuit of camps with Chris Saylor and guys like that. He's got a huge leg. I mean, that's the Tony Elliott just about, you know, was chuckling about it when he started talking about it at one of the press conferences. And he's also talked about a desire to have potentially sort of specialized roles for the kickers, of having one guy do kickoffs and one guy do field goals and extra points. It just in terms of managing workload, managing fatigue. And that's something that even if it's not the guy who's going out to get you 3 points, if it's going out to do the kickoff and putting it into the third row of the, I'm sorry, I don't know if we're going to edit that out, whatever.
This speaking is on, baby. We have no corporate.
This is an explicit content warning on this podcast. But I spoke last week about sort of the ambivalence and uncertainty that I have, and just sort of not sure how to feel about UVA football this year. I really like, again, I'm biased, but the Ganyard story is, I think, really, really cool. And I think it's something that I hope he gets a chance to play, not just because he's my friend, but I think he does have a lot to contribute to the team. And I think it's something that people who are casual fans of UVA, or not fans, you know, fans of schools other than UVA, they're just fans of college football. I think it's a story that can draw eyeballs to this program, hopefully around other good things happening too. Bettridge showed a lot of quality last year. And if it's something that they end up sharing the kicking duties, hopefully that gives Bettridge an opportunity to really focus on going out and getting the 3 points. But of the position groups that I'm the most excited for, it is unquestionably kicker for me this year. And I will now shut up and let you guys talk about the rest of special teams.
Yeah, well, I think Daniel Sparks at punter is potential all ACC guy right there. Not that I know a whole lot about every single punter in the ACC, but as the world's biggest Jacob Finn fan, he was the punter a couple of years ago, transferred from Florida, and he was phenomenal. But I think Daniel Sparks has got in him as well. But I think there's two things that I want to note on special teams. One, like I said, just like special teams are a lot about like intricacies and like just like doing the little things right, so to speak. And like, just, I hope there's not procedural issues on the special teams early on, like there were last year, because there are just so many like false starts on punts and it was just bad. So hopefully that's not the case. Second off, I think the most important thing, yes, when UVA gets in the red zone, if they don't convert on third down to get those 3 points, but what will be even more important is turning those red zone visits into seven.
Yeah, I think Sparks, I mentioned before, but I think that he is the 110 that I will hand out today, just because, I mean, he was preseason all ACC already. I think Gaither has talked about, Keith Gaither, running back coach and special teams coordinator, has talked about wanting to get sort of more to the point of placing kicks so that they can, because he outkicked the coverage at times last season. And so fine-tuning that more, again, ideally they're not punting too much, but the reality is obviously that they will some. And I think that Sparks, it's nice to know that you have that. Like, you know, he's not going to raise your ceiling, but maybe he makes a difference in some game and flips the field, something along those lines. Kicker will be fun. Like, no matter who is kicking field goals for this team, it will be a story. And I think that you can be, you know, assuming that they do split up the duties, which this program's done in the past, even before Tony Elliott was here. And if not, it was a big emphasis from him last season. Whenever the ball is kicked, I think that UVA can feel good about it, typically. If it's Bettridge on field goals, it's about consistency and strength in that leg. I think I asked Gaither about it in the spring, and he just, you know, Bettridge can hit from far out. It's just doing it repeatedly and getting to the point where if it's in the 30s, it's in. And so if he can do that, I think that, you know, or if he can't and they need to go to another leg, then I think that they have the opportunity to do that. So I think that you should feel good about UVA special teams from just a pure kicking the ball standpoint. Beyond that, if they can make sure and ensure that the other pieces of the puzzle work well, then it could be a solid group, and kick returning and punt returning could also be talented because they've got speed and they've got guys who in open space can make plays. Paul, additional thoughts on the other elements of special teams?
Yeah, no, I think that's we've talked in as we've talked about other groups of, there are young guys with a lot of speed and a lot of talent. You know, the special teams can be a place that they can really start to step into this program and start contributing early. So I think there is a lot of reasons to be enthused about the return game. And it's a place where, you know, guys can become role players and contributors before they become household names. So hopefully we'll start to learn who some of those guys are here in short order.
Awesome. Well, I believe, unless I missed any positions, that's this podcast. Thank you all for listening along. Dan, Paul, if you have final thoughts on this roster, obviously we'll probably all be talking again relatively soon, but any final thoughts on our positional preview?
Just All excited right. for a little bit of week zero action this Saturday.
Yeah, go so. UMass.
All right. Well, college football is almost back, and so is Streaking the Lawn, and maybe even more importantly, Speaking the Lawn. So visit the website, streakingthelawn.com. We're getting more stuff up there as football kicks off and as we get closer and closer to basketball. So read, listen, click, like, comment, do all the things. Thank you all for listening, and go.